It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Earlier this week, Congress passed the largest housing affordability bill in decades with substantial bipartisan support.
The bill has numerous provisions, including banning corporate investors from buying hundreds of homes to rent, encouraging more home construction, and loosening regulations on manufactured homes.
But President Donald Trump canceled the signing ceremony yesterday and posted on Truth Social he is tying the bill's future to a strict voter ID and proof of citizenship bill, the Save America Act.
While the landmark housing bill awaits Trump's signature, we're taking a look at what it could mean here in Wisconsin.
Paul Aylesworth is Director of Affordable and Sustainable Housing Development in the Department of Real Estate and Urban Land Economics at UW-Madison. Paul, thanks for joining us in the studio.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, looking at the politics of this for a sec, it's tangled. I think it's fair to say, if you ask, will this thing come into law? The answer is probably, question mark. That said, if it does come into law, sponsors, supporters here in our congressional delegation from both parties say it's a big deal. Is it a big deal if it comes into law?
I think absolutely it's a big deal. I mean, this is a bill that's trying to kind of crack the big nut that is increasing housing supply in our state, which, you know, most folks agree is the main contributor to the high housing costs. Studies estimate that the state needs to build between 140,000 and 227,000 homes in the next few years to keep up with demand. And, you know, while this bill is sort of, I'd say, offers a ton of incremental, it's a ton of incremental changes. They're important changes. You know, stimulating housing demand is a tricky thing because it often takes a lot of small fixes and often takes a lot of time. And this bill certainly is reflective of that. It is voluminous. I struggle to even get to, we won't be able to talk about everything
every
in this bill.
Every single point, right. Well, let's start digging into some details here. One that gets a lot of attention, and there's some argument over how much impact it'd have, is this idea of corporate ownership of single-family homes, the idea that private equity companies are buying a bunch of single-family homes, turning them into rentals. This puts limits, if I'm a corporation, on how many houses I can buy here. Is this something that ultimately makes a difference in housing cost or that key part of it, supply?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel less convinced about this one, to be totally honest with you. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to bed every night worried about the fate of private equity. However, you know, if you look at the numbers, investors really only make up 3% of the ownership of single-family homes across the country. I don't know if we're barking up exactly the right tree on this one. Plus, single-family rentals can offer a meaningful opportunity for folks who otherwise don't have the capital, don't have significant barriers to buying a home, for them to be able to get into a neighborhood, a home that has the amenity structure, maybe good schools, access to transit, things they might like. So I think we need to find ways to, in some ways, to even possibly support single-family rentals.
Now, another part of this is increasing the amount that capital banks can invest in low-income housing. And you've worked as an affordable housing developer in the past, I understand. What kind of impact could this have on Wisconsin's supply of affordable housing?
Yeah, this one I think could be significant. So basically, this piece of the legislation allows banks that can currently only invest 15% of their capital in what's called public welfare investments, which includes affordable housing, and takes that amount up to 20%. And that can free up really across the country billions of dollars to invest into projects funded by some of the main tools that tend to finance affordable housing, like low-income housing tax credits, the types of credits that in Wisconsin WEDA is responsible for organizing, administrating, and distributing. In a way, this is a nice piece of coordination at a federal level. Last year, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act significantly increased the amount of low-income housing tax credits that are available to developers to build affordable housing. That increase in credit available had an impact in the market. It seemed as though credits were somewhat devalued because of the increase in credit tax credits available. This will increase the amount of capital into that system, hopefully rebalancing some of those markets, enabling us to stretch those credit dollars farther, build more housing.
Now, affordable housing.
Affordable housing, that means, specifically.
That means different things to different people, though. People at very low income levels who could otherwise not afford houses, even if the prices were fairly low, that might mean them. But workers who have fine jobs in a community, but the housing prices are so high, when we're talking about affordable housing, are we talking about that kind of workforce housing as well, or is that another category?
So we're absolutely talking about workforce housing here. So, you know, developments financed by the low-income housing tax credit, they're targeted, especially in areas with increasing housing costs. They house a lot of your sort of your teachers, your workers, your folks who are filling important civic roles in communities. They're absolutely workforce housing. I will say, though, and I did development like this for quite a while. Some of these tools, including the ones I'm talking about, struggle to hit the very lowest income brackets. Folks earning at what we call 30% of the area median income or less. They are often the hardest folks to serve and house. And in Wisconsin, we have a significant issue, as basically every state in the country does, in serving those folks. And I'm talking about people in Wisconsin averaging households at like $31,000 a year earning and below. But, you know, those are like home health aides, nursing assistants. These are working people, sometimes seniors, sometimes folks with disabilities. You know, 72% of those households are extremely cost burdened, meaning they're spending over 30, sometimes over 50% of their income on rent. You know, I do absolutely question whether this bill and these changes will provide meaningful outcomes for those folks. I definitely question whether this bill will provide meaningful changes for these sort of housing insecure folks in the short term.
We're talking about the housing affordability bill that passed Congress this week, awaiting action from the president. Paul Aylesworth is with us from UW-Madison, director of affordable and sustainable housing development there. Paul, a couple of weeks back, I talked to a local leader in northwestern Wisconsin who's looking at manufactured homes as part of their solution, saying, hey, we need to give them another look here in Wisconsin. There is some action on that. This gets a little funky. Changing regulations on the chassis of these things, saying, hey, these don't have to be mobile homes that you can move from one place to another. Talk us through that. And is this something that could meet maybe some of those needs of that lower income spectrum that you were talking about?
Yeah, I think it could. I mean, it's also an incremental change. I've seen estimates saying that on a particular build, that the chassis might cost something like $5,000 to $10,000. So significant. And it's true. And I think it's meaningful and logical. It's a meaningful and logical thing to change. A lot of times, manufactured homes are delivered to where they are and put on a foundation and not moved. So why do you need a chassis? So I think that is meaningful. There's also some work in this legislation to aid in sort of financing and mortgage availability for manufactured housing. So yeah, I think that there's a step in the right directions there.
As you mentioned at the outset, we can't get to every detail here. What else stands out to you in this legislation that you see as a potential difference maker?
Yeah, I think, and I'm when I was, you know, preparing to be on and speak with you guys, I was thinking specifically about Wisconsin and specifically about rural communities, honestly. I think, you know, I did most of my housing development in urban settings. A lot of housing programs work better in urban areas for a lot of different reasons. But there are some things that can help rural places, too. So there's a program called Section 515 that's financed affordable housing, subsidized affordable housing in rural communities for a long time. It's a sort of combination of mortgage assistance to a developer and rental assistance to tenants. A lot of those mortgages are coming due, ending. This program decouples the mortgage, the rental assistance from the mortgage, allowing those tenants to continue with affordable rents. So I think that could be meaningful in rural areas. Another thing that's been interesting about this bill is that, you know, I have a hard time not critiquing it because it's cost neutral, right? This whole thing is designed not to increase any costs. There's not new spending here. So I could literally talk you down any of these programs and probably say, well, if there was more money in this, it would be better. However, there's been some meaningful changes in here, I think, to two federal block grant programs, home and community development block grants. And specifically community development block grants, the change to them, that it's and for a bit of context, these are federal dollars that are available to municipalities and counties across the country and in Wisconsin to traditionally do a bunch of community development activities, whether it's sort of public infrastructure projects, economic development, and also, to this point, aid in some sort of repairs of existing housing type of work. This bill allows those funds, which are available to communities across the state, to use that for new construction of housing. So it's not increasing the overall pie to do that, to do kind of all of that stuff. Probably do need more money, but it is meaningfully allowing and giving the flexibility to use those funds to leverage to create more affordable housing in some of these places. So I think some meaningful sort of nips and tucks to make things more effective, make things more flexible, and over time and together probably have a big impact.
Paul, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
All right, thanks so much for having me.
That's Paul Aylesworth, Director of Affordable and Sustainable Housing Development in the Department of Real Estate and Urban Land Economics at UW-Madison. We've been talking about this bipartisan housing bill passed by Congress, awaiting action by the White House now. In the meantime, love to hear what your community needs, maybe your own family needs, when it comes to housing availability and affordability in your neck of the woods. Send us an email. Email wisconsintoday@wpr.org. That's wisconsintoday@wpr.org.